Blog Talk Radio.
All day, nigga. Yeah. Hey. Hey, hey, hey. All day, nigga. How long you niggas ball, ball? All day, nigga. How much time you spent at the mall? All day, nigga. How many runners do you got on call? All day, nigga. Swish, swish. How long they keep you in call? All day, nigga. Take you to get this fly? All day, nigga. Tell your P.O. how long you been high? All day, nigga. Now already know I'm straight from the shaft. All day, nigga. Top, 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 side. All day, nigga. This shade, nigga. Chopping for the winner and the checks made, nigga. Ball so hard, man, this shit crazy, nigga. And you ain't getting money that you got eight figures. But at GZP, man, I been say, nigga. Just talked to Fair Con at Sensei, nigga. Told him I been on 10 since the 10th grade, nigga. Got a middle finger longer than the 10, baby, nigga. I don't let them play with me. I don't let them talk to me no kind of way. They better watch what they say to me. Nigga still getting popped on the day to day. Yeah, I still got the 100 with a small face, nigga. Might spend 50 racks in my off day, nigga. You a fake Denzel like the all say, nigga. If you're running to me, better have off say. What you, you a Rick Suave, nigga. Ride around, listen to Sade, nigga. If you ain't with us, you an our way, nigga. You a actor, you should be on Broadway, nigga. Cause you do shit to Broadway, nigga. Your bitch got an ab on my Broadway sticker. Late for the class in the hallway, nigga. You the dropout at it as always, nigga. As always. All day, nigga. All day, nigga. How long you ball? All day, nigga. How much time you spent at the mall? All day, nigga. How long it take you to get the fly? Fly? All day, nigga. Take your P.O. How long you been high? High? All day, nigga. Post some here and over for my niggas that died. All day, nigga. And I keep a bad bitch on the patch of the side. All day, nigga. Now already know I'm straight to the shower. All day, nigga. Chop. All day, nigga. I can do this all day, boy. Woo! I'm finna turn this bitch out. Any day, yay, in the streets, boy. It been a motherfucking draft. Don't really matter what I made, boy. Woo! You know I still go wild. Wild. Like a light-skinned slave, boy. Woo! We in the motherfucking house. Right now. Looking real stuff right now. I swear I've been on the fly. Like, I'm off right now. Stupid niggas getting money for a stump right now. Shout out to Jackie Chan, I need a stunt right now. They be looking at the gram, I be looking at the Grammys like, that's us right now. Right now. 24-7, 365 days, day by getting paid. Go crazy. Niggas looking at me like I'm worth both them J's. People saying, yay, yay, take it easy. 20 G's for the Yeezys off of eBay. Niggas do the most and they ain't done shit. Only way I can sum it up, some bitch. All day, nigga.
I took a young sweet breath and I reached into my shirt. Gave him what I had left. At that moment, I dispersed. At that moment, I dispersed.
Pill up, pill up, pill up.
All day, nigga.
Till you walk my
Okay, good evening, everybody. Happy Sunday. This is a India Morrell production, Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. I'm here with my co-host, Martin C. Martin, you want to come on in and introduce yourself to the listeners? Okay, I don't hear Martin there right now, which might mean that he's not there. It does not mean that he will not be here, but time shall tell. And also, I was given a message tonight that our executive producer won't be here to do the Dollhouse announcements either. She's stuck out there in Chicago in some kind of a storm that's taking place out there. Rainstorm, no doubt. Not snow. It's summertime. Anyway, so we're going to move right on into the show. My co-host should be coming on at some point. But anyway, well, the topic for discussion tonight has to be the Charleston, South Carolina Bible School Church Massacre. It was a quite horrendous situation, an act that was just outrageous. But you want to know something, though? But to me, it wasn't exactly shocking. Thinking back, I recall last Sunday, we weren't on last Sunday, so I was just up and about doing this and that. And I happened to have been on Facebook as well, and I had seen someone had made a posting about a shooting in a South Carolina church. No, it wasn't Sunday, more so it was Tuesday night or Wednesday. And on Facebook, someone had posted something about a shooting in a church in South Carolina. And at that point, I went to my TV, turned that on. I turned it on occasion. I turned it on to look to see just what might be happening and or if anything was being reported about it. And also had been said in a black church. I kind of figured they might be showing something on the news, and again, it might not be, being that it had to do with black people. I wasn't sure. But when I turned to the news, there was nothing on at that point in time. So I said, oh, well, maybe tomorrow I'll see something, hear something. And then sure enough, well, the next day, it was all over the news about this situation that took place down there in Charleston, South Carolina, this church. And like I said earlier, well, it didn't really surprise me, primarily because I would say that I'm surprised that it hadn't happened sooner. However, I hadn't thought, who would have thought, that something like that would have taken place in a church. Granted, years ago in the 60s, there was a church bombing, and, you know, the three little girls were murdered in that church in the South during the civil rights situation. But come on, most of us have to think that, you know, people would think better than that today. But it's obvious that they don't. So, as I was saying, it didn't surprise me, but it did surprise me that it did happen in a church. But I had figured that if it did happen, it would probably happen just on a street in some black neighborhood, or maybe in some black club, or just where a lot of black people hung out at. But again, it happened to have happened in a church. But before I go on into this topic here, I want to throw out or recite a poem. It's a poem from The Last Poets entitled, "You Say You Don't Want to Die." But also, before I go into that, I want to also say that when I was in the military, I remember when I was in some kind of a class, the instructor, she was instructing a lot of military personnel, and she told us then that it would be good for us to learn some poetry and then commit poetry to memory in the event that as time went along, we may find ourselves prisoners of war and, you know, POWs and, you know, held in some kind of a solitary type confinement situation. And she said that she had said that to avoid, you know, going crazy by committing poetry to memory, this could help us in those kind of situations. I heard that then, and even then I had already committed some poetry to memory. But anyway, going into the poem, again, it's from The Last Poets, entitled "You Say You Don't Want to Die." It goes like so. You say you don't want to die because, I don't want to die because. You say you don't want to die because there's no cause to die for. Now, what would cause you to say that? Is it because you have a good job, a home in the suburbs, or is it because You were pink and yellows, causing all the women to scream from a cause unknown. Just because you seem to be satisfied, that's no cause to forget who is the cause of black people being exploited and oppressed. There have been many causes men have chosen to die for, and many black men are dying for a cause, and because you think there's no cause to die for. Malcolm, Denmark, Vesey all died because they knew what was the cause, causing all of us to be exploited and oppressed. I hope you get a cause to die for soon, because you're going to die anyway, just because you're black. Yes, and I hope you get right soon, so there won't be anything causing me to die just because you didn't believe in our cause. So, niggers and Negroes, listen to this. It's glorious to die for a cause, but not because. And, well, that was from The Last Poets, and just saying, they had put that together as far back as the mid-60s, 67, 68, which is around the time they had come out. And at that time, there was a lot of, well, that was the time when the civil rights movement was really big in this country as well. And they came up as, people referred to them as revolutionary poets. But then again, it was just that their poetry, the things that they said, were not in line with what the civil rights people were basically talking about. You know, about, well, King was saying, you know, we got to love these people no matter how much they hate us and, you know, do good to them. As the Bible says, do good to them who spitefully use you and then, you know, wear these people down with our capacity to love and all that stuff. But The Last Poets, like other people, weren't thinking like that. And these guys came up talking as they spoke and as I had just intoned that particular rhyme there. Now, going back into the Charleston, South Carolina situation. A good question would be, where would I start here? Where is the best place to start here? I guess we can start with, okay, right after the situation had happened, okay, and the guy was finally caught, arrested. Let's stop there first. When this guy, his name, I know the first name is a D, and I remember that it sounds like the name of that guy who was in the, one of the guys who was in the Columbine situation there in Colorado. I don't want to say his name, but his name sounds like that clown's name. But anyway, he was discovered in North Carolina. He committed this crime in South Carolina, but he got as far as North Carolina. And there was a video per the police dash cam that showed the way that they arrested this guy. And being that the video was there per the media, I couldn't help but marvel at the way the arrest went down. But I was glad that they got this guy. But I mean, I watched as the police approached the vehicle with guns drawn. After all, this guy has murdered in cold blood 9 individuals, and has fled. And now he is stopped. And now the police are approaching this guy's vehicle. They don't know anything about him. All they know is what they know. He murdered 9 people. So they have to assume that he is armed. I wouldn't think that they would assume that he's thrown his gun away. I wouldn't assume that. And I'm quite sure that the police didn't assume that. But they're approaching the car. 2, 3, or 4 of them. Let's say 3 of them it was. And what struck me, what I had to marvel at, how as they got closer to the car, I guess at this point they can see into the car. And one of the cops just put his gun back in his holster. I thought, damn, that's interesting. But I continue to watch. And as more cops approached, they put their gun in the holster, went to the door, the car door. They didn't yank it open. They didn't grab him by the scruff of the neck and drag him to the ground. None of that. They helped him out of the car as if he was, well, let's say, a woman. They didn't snatch him. But like I said, they put him up against the car. Put him up against the car. They didn't slam him. They didn't throw him. They didn't push him. They put him up against the car the way they're supposed to do. I'm laughing, or it's not even funny, but I guess I'm kind of snickering or chuckling or something, but it's just ludicrous as to the way they did that. And now as I'm saying this, you know how things go in the brain. I mean, shit is connecting, and it's just incongruent. And things that sometimes to me are incongruent, they make me laugh because they just don't make no sense. But anyway, as I'm saying, they, excuse me, put him up against the car. And then all the cops, you know, they're around him, and not a hand was laid on him. Not a hand. And then now me, I'm thinking back to all of these other things that we've seen per our media when the police come up on some black person, man or woman, child even, that they may have stopped at a traffic, in a traffic situation. Someone will say it's routine, but now the cops say stuff like no traffic stop. Well, like no stop is routine. You got to be on your guard on at all stops. They don't say that a routine traffic stop anymore. I guess they were told to stop saying that. Anyway, but as I said, reflecting back how black people have been stopped on the highway. No warrant out for their arrest. Nothing. Just a traffic stop. Maybe a taillight was out. Maybe, I don't know, maybe the cop just saw they were black and decided, oh, I'm going to stop this person. Anyway, the cop walked to the car, gun drawn, automatically. Car's got windows. How many? Let's say 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 windows the car got. It's windows all over the car. Windows don't be tinted. The cops can see in these cars when they look into them. I'm talking about in the situation now wherein a black person has been stopped. Guns drawn, and they just go up there highly aggressive. Highly aggressive. And then anything can happen. And we've seen things that have happened. One case in particular that popped in my mind when they had stopped this South Carolina murderer of the people in that church was the woman whom had been stopped on some highway somewhere, and the cop got out with his gun drawn, and she had her children in the car, and she feared for her life, and she drove off, and the cop emptied his gun at her car, but he popped off a whole lot of shots at her car. Why? Why? And then contrast that to the way they nicely arrested this murderer. But one thing, though, about that traffic stop, what I did realize was that when a black cop came into the picture, he was kind of aggressive with this guy. Well, maybe I shouldn't say aggressive, but what I will say is that he had his hands on him more than those other white cops had their hands on him or put their hands on him. I mean, he was really, you know, snatching. Well, not really snatching, but he snatched the guy about more than the white cops had snatched him about. And it was just interesting to have seen that, you know. But again, you know, the contrast there. And then also thinking back into, you know, that other thing last week with the young people at that pool, not in McKinney, Texas, but the other place. It's awful. It's just awful. You know, I'm saying at the other place because there was another one. But right now, I kind of forget exactly where it was. So I'm not going to say where it was. But those of you who are up on that, you'll know where I mean. And the incident wherein some cop, they even showed the picture of it. He had his arms around that young black girl. And the way the story turns out, he actually... What did he do? Break her jaw or something like that? And wow, I mean, and for what? For what? But again, going back to the way they arrested that murderer, the differences in the way they do these things. And a lot of times people like to say that, you know, the cops who do these things to black people don't really have no racial animosity between them or no racial animus within them. And we ought to see that that's just not true. That's just not true. And then also going back to this guy whom they arrested, it even came out that they even bought him food. The way I say that, yes, they even bought him food from Burger King even. I guess he said he was hungry. The way the reports went, he told the cops there that he was hungry. So the cop went out and got him some Burger King. Just outrageous, just outrageous. And some people had said, like on my Facebook page, if that situation had been in any way, we can't even say reverse. But if that situation had been in some way, if a black guy had did something just punch somebody, abuse his wife, even, you know, a black wife, abuse her, and then they came and arrested him. You can forget about him getting any meal. If he told them that, if he were to tell them that, excuse me, officer, but I'm hungry, the officer would laugh at him. Actually, yes, he would. He would laugh at him. Okay, so that pertains to that guy having been arrested, the way he was arrested. And the courtesy that that was extended to him by the police, even after such a horrendous act of killing 9 people the way he did. And then again, 9 people, not just in church, but in a Bible study. A Bible study on a Wednesday night. I kind of remember church and Bible studies, just they are normally held on Wednesday nights. And not many people are in the church on Wednesday night either. A handful of the God-fearing, put it like that, because I'm not exactly religious, so I'm just trying to use a word that we can relate to. Not really many of them, but just a few of the God-fearing, and just want to worship God, as they say. They want to worship the Lord as much as they can, every day if they can. And these people went to that church that Wednesday night. And among them, we know that the ages varied. And the highest age, the oldest age, was 87. An 87-year-old woman, this person just shot, killed like that. 87. And as I think of her being 87, I'm thinking mother, grandmother, possibly great-grandmother, and possibly even great-great-grandmother. So therefore, I also think in terms of all the people that she leaves behind and all the people that she has left behind who are now to grieve for her. And then again, especially the little ones, you know, the real little ones, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, them, not even understanding anything. All they know is that grandma or great-grandma is now gone. Why? Why? All they know is that she went to church, and now she's not coming back from church. Outrageous, outrageous. But like I said, 87 years old. He had no compassion for that woman. He had no compassion for any of those people. But again, 87-year-old woman. Out MFing rages. Just took a life like that. But one thing that I think about that hasn't been brought out yet, as they normally do during these situations, they normally bring out to us, you know, at a certain point, where the person was shot, you know, what part of the body, how many times they were shot. I wonder if they're going to do that this time. I really wonder if they will. But then again, still, I think about that 87-year-old woman, how many times he may have shot her. Just horrendous, horrendous. And then still going back or staying in this area where the thing is taking place, the room. And it said that that the guy had reloaded 5 times. That's what's said. We don't know, but I'm only going off what we've all heard, that the guy reloaded 5 times. Some can say that he was allowed to reload 5 times. Could be true like that, that there was no one there willing to rush him, to stop him from reloading any more times. Because we have to figure, well, not even figure, but they told us that each clip that he had, I'm not sure, I think it was 13 bullets he held or had in each clip. And if we loaded five times, we can kind of imagine, because I don't think he missed anybody, not at those close ranges. We can imagine how many bullets he put in each of those people. But again, he reloaded five times, we're told. And it said that within the times that he was reloading, I guess it must have been the young guy who was trying to talk him out of it, telling him that you don't need to do this. And it said that during that time he was talking back to the people, telling the people why he was doing this. But again, it said that people, well, not people exactly, but it was said that somebody was telling him that he didn't need to do this, trying to reason with him to not do this. But he had his own reasoning. He was giving the people, or this guy who was talking to him, the reasons why he will do this, the reason why he must do this. Now, see me, I've evolved a long time ago, and I'm still here, but as I said, I evolved, mentally evolved a long time ago to know that some people you can't talk to. Some people you can't reason with. Some people are, what's the word, impervious to reason. I found this out. Yes, I did. I found this out. So therefore, it's just unfortunate that the guy in that church who was trying to reason with that maniac didn't know that some people you just can't talk to. Some people you just can't reason with. Some people you just can't be rational with. Some people you can't be peaceful with. The only thing that some people understand is violence. Malcolm X knew that. He told us that when he was here a long time ago. I was a child when Malcolm was here speaking. But I've grown up to know that Malcolm was right. Some people you can't talk with or reason with or any of those things that I just said. It's a useless endeavor. That's why sometimes even on the internet, if I'm on Facebook or if I'm on Twitter, and I get I come to realize that I'm involved with what I now know people call a troll. Once I realize that I'm talking with this kind of person, I cut it off. And I just go elsewhere. I say, okay, you're one of those people, and I just move on. I have nothing else to say to a person like that. Not even in, as a Facebook friend of mine liked to phrase it, not even when I'm engaged in fiber optics. I kind of like that phrase. Well, not even if I'm engaged in fiber optics do I stick around to try to reason with someone like that. You know. So, like I said, and I say again, it's just so unfortunate that that guy who was trying to reason with this individual hadn't evolved to know what I now know and what Malcolm tried to tell us a long time ago. Some people understand nothing but violence, and it's obvious now that that guy who was in that church that Wednesday night, all he understood was violence. And it's natural, or most, how can I put it, it has to be obvious, too, that he was a coward, serious coward. Of course, no doubt, he knew Wednesday night would be a night when not many people would be in the church. He also knew that Wednesday night, Bible study, the people who would be in the church would primarily be elderly and women. He knew this. He knew this. A coward. And he went in there with a gun, knowing that those who would be there wouldn't be armed in a church. Who? Anyway, he knew that. He was a coward. But again, but the people who were in there, they weren't cowards. Not at all. But it didn't matter if they were cowards or not. But it does matter that they didn't know that you couldn't talk to that person, because if they had known that, they would not have let him reload five times. And concerning that bastard, I got to say it like that bastard reloading those five times. I was watching something on one of the news channels, and they had one senator or some political person they were interviewing, white guy, I think from down there in that area, and they were talking to him about what had transpired. And he brought up the fact also that that guy was, he said, allowed to reload five times. And I can't help but remember, and never will forget, how when he said it, unlike I'm saying it, he kind of smiled. There was like a smile on his face when he said that he was allowed to reload five times. I mean, like, okay, and what? He think that's funny? He was smiling. But again, they always think that we're funny, comical. That's why, basically, on TV, not the news, because in the news, they only show us as criminals, things of negativity. But in media, primetime, sitcoms, I guess you'll know where I'm going with this. All the shows that they have us in are comedies. Comedies. Because they think we're funny. They think we're clowns. Always had and still do. It's just outrageous. And yes, they'd be laughing at us. That's why that senator, who whatever position he had, was laughing, chuckling, when he said he was allowed to reload five times. And then that is true. The bastard was allowed to reload five times. But again, that's only because there was no one there who knew that you couldn't reason with a motherfucker like, sorry about that, who knew that you couldn't reason with a person like that. Because if someone had been there who knew you couldn't reason with a person like that, he wouldn't have been able to reload five times. He would have got that first clip emptied and wouldn't have been able to load any more clips. It's just like that. And then coward that he was, he probably would have fled the scene, ran, or even started, you know, crying. No, don't hit me no more. Don't hit me no more. Even after he done shot one, two, or three people, or even just one person. He done shot one person two or three or four times, because remember, his clip is empty now. So he got to reload. But he wasn't given a chance to. I'm just being hypothetical here. But he hadn't been given a chance to reload. And he would have got the F-U-C-K beat out of him. And he would have been begging. All of a sudden, he begging now. He done killed somebody, shot somebody who was unarmed. Now he begging because he's not armed anymore. All he got now is his fists and feet and mouth. Well, just outrageous. Outrageous. And then, also, going on into the other phase, something else with this situation. The next day after they had caught him, it wasn't the next day, but it must have been on that Friday, when they had him in the courtroom. And the judge said a few words to him. He asked him his name. I didn't hear him ask him how he pled, but I guess they were supposed to have done that, but they didn't do it. What they more so let us hear primarily was the victim's family members. Forgive this monster. Forgive this cretin. That's another word for some kind of a monster. Forgive this fiend. Yes, the family members who have been victimized. How can I put that? I think I said that wrong. What I'm saying is that the surviving family members forgave or were offering words of forgiveness to this animal. I mean, I couldn't believe that while listening to that. When I heard it, as I'm listening, I mean, it made my stomach turn. Matter of fact, I got some words here that I had written down. I had said this today, written this on a fake Facebook posting that I had posted concerning them forgiving him. What I had written was, kill a friend of mine or family member just because they are black, or more so because their being black is all messed up in your head. There's no forgiveness. There isn't even any coming to terms with that in a mental or intellectual sense. Ordinary death of a friend or family member is difficult to reconcile, if reconciling even has any real meaning. In a situation like we are talking of, what is it for one to talk about forgiveness? I know I couldn't do it. Is it something I therefore lack, or is it something they lack? Surely it's something. It even pains me or grates on something within me, knowing those black people said what they said. Even when I initially heard them, it turned my stomach. I even uttered an audible groan. It hurt. Yes, I got it bad. So for me, I don't know how those people could do that, forgive that, even tell that guy like that, even crying they were as they were rendering their words of forgiveness because of the pain that they felt within. And I had seen via Facebook how one guy had written, and it's true what he had written. I had to like what he written. I pressed the like button quickly. He said that these people who forgave this guy as they did and so quickly, he had said that these people haven't even been home yet to know feels without that person whom they had loved being in the house. They haven't even, that hasn't even sunk in yet. You know, to be home and this person who is now dead won't be there no more, but who used to always be there. Just so, like a fixed fixture in the house, but more than a fixed fixture, a human being, your mother, father, your brother, your sister, your grandmother, your great-grandmother, friend. But like I said, as this guy said, these people haven't even let that sink in yet, being home without these people. He even went further to say that these people who forgave this guy so quickly as they did haven't even been in that person's closet yet, to remove their clothing out of that closet, out of those drawers. They haven't done any of this yet. And yet here they are, forgiving this beast, this animal, Neanderthal, this fiend. And he went further to say, what else was that other thing he had said? Well, basically, They haven't gone through anything yet. You know, the grieving process, that's what people call it. When someone whom they love has passed. But in a case like this, it's not a thing about the one whom they loved had passed. In a case like this, one whom they had loved has been just taken away, snatched away by a process of murder, foul murder by some lunatic because he didn't have value in his mind concerning a life that's black. So even bringing that up in the air, the thing about Black Lives Matter, it's obvious that to this fiend, Black lives didn't matter at all. Zero. not even the 87-year-old woman. Didn't matter at all. Zero. Just outrageous. But I was on the grieving thing, yes. As I said, those people, they haven't even gone through any grieving at all. And here they are forgiving this person. And a lot of people, at least on my Facebook page, I don't know so much about Twitter, because Twitter, if you know about Twitter, everybody's on there and just going everywhere. They just throw everybody in your Twitter feed. That's a long story about it. I have heard that you can limit the people who be on your Twitter feed, but I'm not there yet. But anyway, but on Facebook, it's different, and a lot of people were saying a lot of things about, especially the grieving process, how these people haven't even, you know, had the proper time to grieve yet. So really, how can they be so quick to forgive? What's with that quick forgiveness? It didn't make sense. Some even feel that, some even said that it's a drawback from slavery, wherein no matter what happened to us, we were quick to forgive those who did what they did to us. Primarily because we were afraid not to. Even just consider that there then also. There was a point in time wherein none of us in this country who were living at those points in time, something happened, we had no time to grieve even. Imagine that. Back during the days of, let's say, slavery. And maybe, segregation too, because we lived in fear then as well. They had us back into a fearful situation as well then. Yes, they did. So they would just, okay, the slavery thing. Just come, I mean, because of whatever, the slave master feeling some kind of way, and he just, you know, let's say, sell your son, sell your daughter, sell your mother, sell your father, whatever. And, hey, mother, father, brother, sister, gone. What? And it was like, shut up. And if we didn't shut up, I guess we were what? Beat with a whip. And I guess that made us shut up, it made us shut up for that moment. But then again, too, even our grief, we had to submerge. You know, the feelings that come from that painful separation, even in terms of, you know, one that we love being removed physically from one place to another. Not dead, but just move from the place where we are used to having them, seeing them, they move from this place, let us say, whomever that person was, being sold from North Carolina to, let's say, Georgia. Naturally, it's going to affect the person who this has happened to. But even then, we weren't allowed to grieve. We would be asked. We would be asked. Why aren't you smiling, boy or gal? Why aren't you smiling? Something wrong with you? And what do we do? Well, more so, what are we told? Or what have we been told that they did? What have we read that they did? Yes, sir, master. Yes, sir, boss. I'm okay, boss. Had to act like it don't faze us. It don't bother us. But it did. Big time. So like yesterday, evidently, so today, for some of us, and evidently, this is the situation with those people there in Charleston whose loved ones were just snatched away, murdered the way they were murdered, and they're going to forgive this MF the way they did. Had no time to grieve. Can we think that they will grieve? Well, naturally, we know that they will have to grieve. But then again, no doubt, when they come out into the public or whenever a camera is put in their face, they got to show a better face than a grieving face. Because what? They're supposed to be, still, they think that, well, no, they want to think that, how can I put this? They want to think that they think we are superhuman. And by the same token, we are supposed to respond to them as we think they think we are. Did that make any sense? But again, that's the way it is, because we're not supposed to grieve. I guess to them, we're supposed to be stronger than that. We're supposed to be bigger than that. But yet, let something happen to them. Oh, they're crying. They're grieving. And when we see that, we're supposed to come and pat them on the shoulder. Is everything all right? Are you okay? It'll be better later, huh? We're supposed to do that for them. They don't even consider doing that for us. We're not supposed to grieve still in this day. But then again, also, some people say that in a real sense, it really has nothing to do with any of that negative stuff that I just said. Some will say that it's because of their God consciousness, their religious sensibilities, their meditations on the gospel of Jesus Christ, meditating his word about what we're supposed to do concerning this world and things that happen to us in this world, because this is not our home, and things that happen like water off a duck's back, let it go, because your Father in heaven, so I guess we're supposed to believe your Father in heaven knows what he's doing. He brought these people to a well. He allowed what happened to happen because this is a part of his plan. Oh, surely you don't understand. You can't understand the things of God. You ought not try to understand the things of the Lord. This is what others tell us this thing about forgiveness is. It's because of their unique God consciousness that makes them, or that has caused them, to forgive like that. And saying that, it's like this is what we're all supposed to do. But concerning that, I mean, concerning this alleged or supposed unique God consciousness that is thrown over our heads, and that's supposed to be on our heads, it's not even on their heads at ALL. Case in point, as have been mentioned, as I have seen Facebook postings, and I thought of this as well. Consider 9/11. This country, us in this country, I guess the general us, or most in this country, 9/11. Like to talk about 9/11. What happened then? There was nothing about forgiveness on nobody's lips in this country when 9/11 happened concerning those who did this thing. There was no talk about forgiveness. There was no talk about what Jesus said. There was no talk about, well, what the Bible says. No, there was none of that. And all right, they even showed that clown Bush talking something about, you know, the people who knocked down these buildings, they're going to hear from us in a while. That's what he said. So I didn't hear nothing about God in his words. He was talking about war. He was talking about retaliation. He was talking about let's go get them. Nothing about, you know, we have to forgive them because they know not what they did. Nobody was talking like that in this country. Nobody. And in a real sense, it's almost as if it wasn't even expected for nobody in this country to be talking like that. I guess if someone were to start saying something like that, well, you know, hey, the Bible don't say that we ought to go over there and start bombing those people. The Bible tells us that we're supposed to forgive those who despitefully use us. We're supposed to forgive them who hit us on one side of the cheek and we're supposed to give them the other cheek. That person would look that like he or she was crazy. But no, it wasn't like that. Not at all. Not at all. And then again, even consider how things go on right now. It's like almost a celebration in the news media. I won't say in the country per se, because I don't know about the whole country, but it's almost like a celebration whenever our news media puts on something about how some drone has killed some terrorist over there somewhere. They speak about that gleefully, joyously, like it's okay. It's something we got to do. It's something we're supposed to do. Nothing about forgiveness. Nothing about, you know, loving your enemy. Nothing about, you know, seeing that these people are children of God. None of that. Not at all. But yet, coming back to this situation, but yet when it comes to us, when it comes to us, and in a situation like that, nine people murdered without cause, no reason. They didn't twist this idiot's arm. They didn't slap him upside his head. They didn't do anything to him. Anything. They didn't know him from Adam. And as it said, they welcome him into their midst. I guess after all, it's a church. It's a church. They welcome him in their midst. He came in and sat down. And they say for a whole hour he sat there. Before he got up and did what he did. Just out MF and rages. But again, nobody talked about, but you want to know something, though? When I began to get the full story on this situation, as what happened began to come to me more and more, and I began to process what I was hearing and then realizing what I'm hearing and what happened, I tried to contrast that in a real sense with the usual, yes, the usual police violations. See, that's a euphemistic term there, the usual police violations that take place against us. But more so, to be a bit more blunt, the usual police killings that take place against us. I thought about how when those things happen, you know, the black community in which that happens, people are outraged. I won't say up and on because we don't go to grab arms. No, we don't. But we're outraged. And what do? We take to the streets. March here and march there. And sometimes it's said that we loot, but that's debatable because we never know in these days who are police people, who are not police people in these crowds. That's becoming known now today also. But anyway, we march, we protest, we go to City Hall and all that when the usual police killings take place. But I thought to myself, you know, what happens now? I mean, nine people are dead, killed, for no reason other than, no. Them being black is not a valid reason. The reason falls back on that MF who pulled the trigger on all those people. The reason falls back on him, whatever was in his head, his reason, which is no reason. Yeah, well, I'll even say it because he said something about, you know, you rape our women, you're taking over our country. What? Remember, he killed six women, and he killed an 87-year-old woman. Did she rape anybody? What country is she trying to take over, or any of them? We can barely vote in this country. I chuckle, but it's not funny. It's ludicrous. It's what's that word? It's incongruent. Okay, that's an incongruent mental calibration. it's incongruent for a person to process some nonsense like that, talking about you rape off when, where, how. But then again, I thought to myself, when I heard that, I've heard that before. And this guy is just 21 years old, and I heard that, or more so read of that, from historical text from the 1920s. And I mean, even the Birth of the Nation, I've seen that movie, and they talk about the black men rape white women. He got that shit from way the fuck back there. So what is he talking about? You ludicrous nonsense. So it's like, he killed them. Why? It don't make sense. So as I'm saying, in a real sense, it's not because they were black, but it's because of what was roving around in his space head, in his brainless head, that he did that. I kind of lost my train of thought there as to what I was saying, because I was going to say that these people are dead now because they're black. But again, that's not why they are dead, no longer here with us. So I guess I have to move on, because that particular thought is gone. I'll try to get it back, because I remember that I was talking about how was it, well, the religious situation here or there, and how, you know, blacks are supposed to be rigid in line with the biblical text. And then how, when it comes to whites, they don't necessarily follow that, not at all. And as I had said earlier, take the case in point with the 9/11 situation. None of that going on. No forgiveness. None whatsoever. But again, let me move on, because I kind of lost that train of thought. So, coming up out of that even, the situation there with this clown just killing those people like that, and then the people forgiving him as they forgave him. As I said in the beginning, that's something that I couldn't do. I wouldn't do. Oh, yes. I got the train of thought back where I was. Yes, yes. What I was talking about was how, it was there, but it left me again. What I was talking about was how, it's gone again, but it was almost there. I almost had it. You know how that happens when you're talking about something and then you try to segue to something else and hope you'll come right back to what you were saying, because it's all related. That happens too many times to me, and I told myself that I got to stop doing that, but evidently I don't stop doing that. So anyway, that thought may come back to me. But in the meantime, going on further into this issue, we now have the issue of the Confederate flag being spoken of. Right now it's just the Confederate flag that's being spoken of. And it's being said that it should, well, there in South Carolina in particular, where the situation took place, it's being said that that flag should come down from the Confederate memorial that is now on. However, previously it had been on the state capitol building itself. But some time ago, they had some, I guess people were complaining then, and they had a compromise. They called it a compromise. They moved it from where it had been on the state capitol and moved it to the Confederate War Memorial, which isn't far from the state capitol. Compromise, they called it. Compromise. You know. So now there's a thing about the Confederate flag coming down. And as for me, as others believe, I don't think it should have ever went up. I don't think it should have ever survived the passing of the Civil War. It should have been buried then. Well, maybe they wanted to, maybe they felt then to put it in a museum. Maybe. But that then would have depended upon the victors. Because as they say, the spoils of war go to the victors. So therefore, it would have been up to those of the North who won that war with the help of black men and black women. That's something that's not known, but should be known. And the thing is, We don't know that exactly because they don't put it in our educational curriculum. If anything, if we want to learn about the part the black men and women played in the Civil War, other than staying at home on the plantation, which is what is in the books in the curriculum, that we waited to be free, which is not true at all. So, as I said, the spoils go to the victor, the North, Northern Army, with the help of black men and women, won that war. So therefore, black men and women also should have had something to say, excuse me, about that Confederate flag. The original one, or even the one that they call the battle flag, to me, it don't matter. They both shouldn't be here. Because, I mean, like really, historically speaking, in terms of what happened at that point in time, how the Confederate flag even came into being, at that point in time, the southern states who were slave states, who didn't want to go by or follow northern dictates, not even about ending slavery. It wasn't about ending slavery. It was just that, you know, slavery wasn't to advance any further than where it was, that slavery wasn't to go into any of the newly acquired territories, and also other issues about slavery too, such as the Fugitive Slave Bill. They had ran it through Congress, and the situation had been that at that point in time, black men and women really weren't safe anywhere in this country, in the sense that any white person could declare that this person was a slave, and they could hook up false documents to prove or ascertain that they were actual property, although they were free. They could be enslaved. That black man or woman or black child could be enslaved. But however, the northern states, I guess we can say some of them weren't going for that. I guess maybe it does matter, maybe it don't matter which ones weren't going for it or which ones were going for it, but some of them weren't going for it. And for the South, that was just too much anyway. So there was an issue there. And then plus with the non-slavery extension policy that the North had finally laid down, they felt, you know, you can't tell us we can't do this. We can't bring our slaves here or there, that we can't bring slaves into newly acquired territory that is just as much ours as yours. So, you know, the debate went back and forth. But I guess the talk ran out. They didn't want to talk no more. I guess the South, let us say the South and the North, they weren't budging on this issue. So therefore, the South declared war on the United States government. We can say the federal government, United States government, because the South formed their own government illegally, in a real sense, because it's a involved and convoluted situation. Because you had some politicians saying at that time that, you know, states can't go out the Union. It's illegal. But you had others say, but they're already out. And some would say, well, bring them back. How do we do that? And the South was telling them, not without war. Well, then again, the South wasn't even coming back. They had thought that, really. They had thought that they could fight a war about slavery, and win a war about slavery. When they had something like, what they say, something like 4 million slaves in their midst, 4 million or more slaves in their midst they had, and they wanted to fight a war to maintain, preserve, and spread slavery. So they fought a war about that. That was the Southern cause. Some historians even want to act as if the Civil War wasn't about slavery. Some say it was about what? States' rights. But then when you consider states' rights about what? States' rights to maintain the system of slavery? States' rights to expand the system of slavery? states' rights to do what? Raise their own taxes? States' rights to do what? Create their own irrigation system? It wasn't about that. It was about slavery. But yet somehow, some way, they get around that with all of these smoke screens that they throw up. I was even reading some article today wherein some person had said that a lot of the Confederate soldiers who fought for the Confederacy, they didn't own slaves. That's true. That's true. But yet they fought for the Confederacy. And then this writer was saying, as other writers have said, but they weren't fighting to maintain slavery. That's what they say. These Southerners, Confederate soldiers who were fighting, they weren't fighting to maintain slavery. They were fighting, they say, because they were against an invading army invading their homeland. But remember, or they forgot, this is America. We have something called an American Union, the American Republic. So, I mean, America is America, Northern or Southern. But now because of this conflict that's come down, they got to take sides, or it's like these people who think that thought about, you know, these Southerners who didn't own slaves, but yet they still fought for the Confederacy, they talk as if these men were just defending their homes. Okay, let us say that happened to be in the South. That don't make no sense. Does it or do it? They fought for the Confederacy because they were defending their homes that happened to be in the South. And in the South was a government that succeeded, separated from the United States government to form its own government, which was, well, we can say an illegal act. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. But anyway, what happened, happened. And then now here, there they are, fighting for the Confederacy. And, all right, individuals now fighting for the Confederacy. But the Confederacy itself is fighting to maintain slavery. But yet you got individual men caught up who don't own any slaves who are also fighting for the Confederacy. And they're fighting now for the Confederacy also to maintain slavery. Although in their minds, they're thinking, so is being said. In their minds, they're thinking that it's to defend my home, it's to defend my state. No, no, no. It was about slavery, because if slaves weren't there, there would have been no war, primarily, basically. So, up come the Confederate flag. They talk about the first Confederate flag. That look, I mean, it wasn't like what they came to call the battle flag. But anyway, now there is the Confederate flag, let's say the national Confederate flag, and then you have the state Confederate flag with the stars and bars, so they say. Okay, and now this is the flag that they ran into battle with. And it turned out that the South lost the war, although they had 4 million slaves. And in a real sense, the South had actually thought, believe it or not, that those 4 million plus slaves would be an asset to them, because they thought the Confederate leaders, the ones who took it upon themselves to secede from the American Union, they had thought that these 4 million slaves would be an asset in the sense that Southern men could be off to war, and the 4 million slaves could be back home on the plantation feeding the Southern Army. So therefore, they felt that they could put the Southerners, therefore felt that because of slavery, they could put many more men in the field or on the field of battle than the northern states could. Because, like I said, as it has been written, basically, I get what I'm saying from the book by W.B. Du Bois, his Black Reconstruction in America. I'm getting what I'm saying from that book. I don't know what those other white historians are saying, because think about it, I went to school and I never really read anything, or we never really read anything about the Civil War, other than that there was a war, the North and South. The South lost, and Lincoln freed the slaves. That's what we were told. We weren't told that blacks played any part in that war, but I digress. Going back to what I was saying, the Southerners felt that with their surplus, because that's what they called it, a surplus population, they could commit more men to the field of battle than the North could, because in the North, they have their system also of, let's say, work and production. And if men have to go to war, let's say, from the northern side, who's going to produce the foods? It takes workers to do that. It takes men to do that, and women. But again, well, the women's situation is, that's another issue anyway. But anyway, it takes men to do that, men to work the farms, men to run machinery. So therefore, the men that the North would have on the battlefield, that took away from their situation of producing, let us say, even war materials. They need workers in the northern factories. Let us just use that as an example. They needed men to work in the factories to build war munitions, whatever they might be. And by the same token, you had the same situation there in the South. They needed men in the fields, plus they needed men behind to build or work in the factories to supply the army that is on the move. But again, the Southerners, the Confederacy, felt with these 4 million slaves, they had it made. They really did. However, they forgot in their calculations that black people had actual minds. They really did. They never considered that we had minds. They never considered that we had thoughts, because basically they thought that we couldn't think. Or if we did think, the only thoughts that we did think were the thoughts that they gave us to think. That's what they thought. Like, okay, boy, we's going to war right now, and what we need, you and Johnny and Pythagoras, because they gave us some ridiculous names back then, and somehow, some way, they gave us a lot of philosophers' names for some reason, Socrates and Xenopithenes and all that, whatever. But anyway, they would tell us, okay, y'all just go and work on the field. We go into war. Y'all just keep working. Everything will be fine. But no, it didn't work out like that. As soon as the slave master rode off, the slaves got to talking. Yo, well, they didn't say yo back then, but they said, hey, ain't nobody here. What do you mean nobody? What do you mean nobody here? Master Tom and Master Bob? The whole, all of them, they done went in uniform and done joined the army. What? You mean there ain't nobody here to watch us? No overseer? No overseer Bill? He gone too. What? What the hell are we doing here then? That's how they felt. And that's when the long, or more so, that's when the trek started off the plantations. Surprised the slave master did. Shocked. The slave master did. Oh, and he was livid. He was angry, very angry. Imagine that. I read per W.B. Du Bois how some Confederate, let us say captain, major, lieutenant, colonel even, after having heard that his slaves, let's say it could have been 50, could have been 1,000, had just up and left the plantation, and they went to the Union Army that's sitting down there by the creek, he was mad as hell. He, in his Confederate uniform, he would walk down there to that Union general or captain and say, look, those are my people. Y'all can't have them. They belong, he would tell them, they belong to me. You can't keep those people there. And the Union officers would say, hey, we didn't take them from you. They came of their own free will here. All 100 of them. All 1,000 of them. And you see all those down there, as far as you can see? They all came of their own free will. We didn't go get them. They came to us. And now, we're going to call them contraband of war. In other words, they told that idiot that he couldn't have them back, because to give them back would interfere with the Union war effort. Remember, they're at war. They're trying to kill each other. They're trying to vanquish each other. But yet, the slaves just up and left the plantation. They didn't stay there, as is told in history books that some of us have read or have been read to us. They didn't just stay there. Okay, granted, some did. Some did, but majority did not. They up and left as soon as they could. And when they did leave, the Union Army provided places for them to set up camp. Well, it's involved, but anyway, the Union Army provided an area for them to be, the slaves who left the plantation. They don't know what they're going to do with these people yet. They have no idea what they're going to do. Men, women, children, families, they didn't know. But like all the South knew was that they wanted them back. They wanted their slaves back. Anyway, they weren't getting them back. And then as time went along, so the history goes, as time went along with the Emancipation Proclamation, now consider also the war started in 1861, wasn't it, when South Carolina fired on Fort Sumter. That's when the war actually started, 1861. Now, Lincoln didn't issue the Emancipation Proclamation until 1863. So therefore, from 1861 on up to 1863, these black men and women, black families from the slave plantations were constantly making a steady trek to the Union Army. Whenever they heard or wherever they heard the Union Army was encamped, they would make it their way there. Well, more so they'd make their way to that Union encampment, that Union Army encampment, because they wanted out of slavery. Again, the white Southerner never dreamed that would happen. It was the furthest thing from his and her mind. How can that have been? But it was like that. So anyway, it wasn't until 1863 when Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, freeing the slaves in those areas that were in rebellion against the United States government, but leaving those enslaved in areas wherein that place wasn't in rebellion against the United States government. Let me say that part again. Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation freeing those slaves in areas wherein that government or that state was in rebellion against the United States. And those states that weren't in rebellion, that had slaves, those slaves remained slaves. With the Emancipation Proclamation having been issued, January 1863, a new situation arose. What to do with all these black people? So long story short, eventually, They put weapons in the black man's hands to fight for his freedom. And he did. And also, to back up a bit, when the Emancipation Proclamation was issued, that's when people got to thinking, strangely, that this is a war to free the slaves. The North, I mean, it's like the South knew that they were fighting to keep slaves in slavery. But it's like the North didn't know that they, no, again, the North wasn't fighting to free the slaves. They were fighting to bring the South back into the Union with or without slavery. That became Lincoln's position. So, as I was saying, so they armed these black men and women. I would believe, well, they probably didn't arm the black women, but black women, I would imagine, had arms too. And I would also imagine that black women took part in the Civil War, no doubt disguised as men. Or maybe even they took part, maybe they took part even being known that they were women. Whatever. But anyway, because arms were in the hands of black men and women, they were the ones who won that war for the northern side. Yes, they were. Yes, they were. And then now, going back to the Confederate flag, those men and women who fought in the Civil War, our ancestors, they saw that battle flag often whenever they fought against it. And they defeated that battle flag often whenever they fought against it. It's only logical because they won the war. So therefore, they defeated that battle flag often. So now the Civil War is over. And then now other things are coming into play. Southerners are still mad that they lost the Civil War. And then again, the black man and black woman are still here. So, it's still a thing as to what's to be done about them. And remember, they're getting flack on both sides because of racism. We now know today to call it racism, to call it what it is, racism. Not racial prejudice, but just outright racism. Just a disdain, a dislike, a total disregard for a black person. That's what it was, coming from both sides. So at that point in time, also, because black men had assisted in the Civil War, there were whites who felt that you know, they we were owed something. We were, in fact, owed something because we assisted in putting down the rebellion. And that's when blacks began to enter government and be in government. They were elected to political positions. They became school teachers, were school teachers, became everything. And matter of fact, a lot of blacks were already these things, even though slavery was here. But now, because it was more black people were more of these things that are to do with building society or building a society, black society included. But again, there we had, okay, especially, let's say, white Southerners, they didn't like that at all. So then up comes the Ku Klux Klan. And they brought up that old battle flag. There it was, to, as they put on their robes and sheets to intimidate black people, to tar and feather black people, to hang black people, to shoot black people, to do whatever to black people, come at them in the middle of the night, drag them out of their homes, and just do whatever to intimidate them, the father, the mother, the brother, the sister, and leave the other ones there fearful because they had no help from nowhere. They couldn't go to the sheriff because the sheriff more than likely was a part of the hooded individuals that came in the night. They couldn't go there. So again, but again, that flag was there. But I can tell you, what I really hadn't known, but because of this situation that has come up now concerning the taking down of the Confederate flag, it said that, you know, that flag, I guess, had been put in abeyance, hadn't been used for a long time, and it didn't come back into popular usage not until the 1960s. And we know what was going on in the 1960s. That was the time of what they called the civil rights movements. Those southern states who were in defiance of the civil rights aims they put up their battle flag to let people know, no, we are not having this. And they were serious. They were dead serious. But you want to know something, though? The reason why I wasn't, well, me, myself, in particular, wasn't aware about that Southern, that Confederate flag not being run up again until the 1960s. It was because the history that I had been reading, primarily about the Klan, that's back during, let's say, the 20s and 30s primarily, and I guess we could say the 40s too, but more so the 20s and 30s, back and 40s, early 40s. Back then, when the Klan would have rallies, they didn't rally with the Confederate flag. They rallied with the American flag. The 52 stars, red, white, and blue. The Confederate flag wasn't there then. That's why it was new to me to know that, that the Confederate flag wasn't brought out again until the 1960s. Because prior to that, the Southerners, they used the actual American flag. And that's when they would march around with the American flag in their sheets and hoods. They'd have huge parades in Washington, D.C. even. Huge parades with a whole line of hooded Klansmen marching in Washington, D.C. with the American flag, the red, white, and blue, the 52-star thing. That's what I'm talking about. So having said that, interesting that I'm coming out of time, running out of time. I got about 3 minutes left. But having said that, this is indicative of something about our country wherein we are living, North and South. It's like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of situation. I mean, they are one and the same. The North, the South, one and the same. The North, the South, one and the same. Back during slavery. And now even, North and South, one and the same, during segregation, and now even. Same thing. That's why it was that those hooded Klansmen would walk parade in hundreds, droves, with the American flag. It was acceptable. But I guess going into the 1960s, when things began to change, when the northern states again begin to have a change of heart about the treatment of black people. Perhaps that's what it was. Perhaps the North again began to have a change of heart about the treatment of black people in the South. But some say, though, that it was because of international pressure and or not wanting to look bad in international eyes, because at that time America was extending out to other darker nations. And the situation of segregation here wouldn't really bode well with those people knowing how we were treated here and stuff like that. So the Northerners felt that, you know, we have to try to nip that Southern stuff in the bud. So therefore, they began to vilify Southern treatment of black people. And the Southern was like, what the fuck? So they said, fuck the American flag, and then they just upped that Southern Confederate flag again. And now here we are today debating that Confederate flag. But I got about a minute left now. But what I want to say also concerning that Confederate flag, it should have never been put up anywhere. It should have been burned and just forgotten a long time ago. But because it wasn't, now is time for it to go, and not only it to go, but for all those other symbols of the Confederate.